All right, so how are you doing? It's been a while since I've been at MSR. It's good to be in PEX World and RISE World. How are you doing, Nikolai?
Hello, I'm Nikolai Tillman. I'm a software design engineer in the RISE Group, and we are going to talk about PEX and Cortica today.
Excellent.
I'm Pelly. I'm doing great, thank you, Charles.
Right on. It's good to see you again, man.
So yeah, Pelly Dualu, and I also work in PEX and Codedigger, and we did Fakes too.
You guys have done a heck of a lot.
And we're mostly these days playing with TouchDevelop, but we're going to talk about Codedigger today.
Excellent. So let's just go back just a little bit. Yeah. So TouchDevelop, you first, you know, we had you at Build last year. In fact,
Michal Muscal was at Build.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, I mean, the RISE team.
Yeah, yeah.
And you guys were, you know, that actually went off quite well. People enjoyed that. What's been going on since then in TouchDevelop world?
We basically embraced, you know, the diversity of devices out there. You know, we were on our way to migrate our system to JavaScript, and now we're really a cross-platform environment development. You know, we run on all the Droids, on all the Apples, and of course on Windows Phone, and all this stuff. So it's a lot of work to kind of migrate our old C# XAML app into the wonderful world of TypeScript.
Excellent, man. And we talked about that at Build, one of your fellow scientists, researchers. That was an excellent talk. So Codedigger. Codedigger evolved out of PEX.
Right.
What?
So many of you might remember PEX, which is a great tool for Visual Studio 2010. And it's marvelous. It has many options. So there was one particular component that we called Molds, which is now actually as Fakes part of Visual Studio. But we haven't updated PEX yet for Visual Studio 2012.
Mm.
So what we wanted to do now is take a fresh look. How can we actually make an experience that is really, really easy? How can we explore code, show you what it can do? That's the old PEX story, but really, really simple.
Okay.
Yeah, so when you look at PEX, it assumes that you have no knowledge about unit testing, and there's going to be those parameterized tests. And it, you know, you look at the pie of developers that do that and kind of shrink each time you add more of those requirements. And it was a lot of plumbing to make that happen, you know, maintaining the test suites and which frameworks do you want to use, and we have to ask that. And we also surfaced a lot of data back to the user. And it basically required an understanding of the engine to use the tool. So with Codedigger, and you know, with the feedback of the Visual Studio guys, you know, like Peter Provost and Jürgen Garden back in the days, we went for the minimalistic experience, you know, kind of the smallest experience about PEX.
Okay.
So how easy can we make it? So what we thought, you have your code somewhere, and then you just right-click with your mouse, and a button will appear where you can select to generate a table
of input and outputs.
Okay.
Then you press that button, and a table appears with different rows for different inputs. So that's what we used to call test cases, but you don't really have to think of it as test cases. It's just a table that show you.
Let's make it more concrete.
Right, let's say you have a variable x, and then there will be a column that shows you for the input x what the code might do. Maybe it throws an exception. So for every if statement in the code, the underlying PEX engine in Codedigger will use a constraint server to figure out what value triggers a certain behavior. For the value 123, it throws some exception. So that's it. That's the entire UI. You right-click, generate table, you get a table. There's nothing to configure. There is no confusing option. We try to make it really simple.
Now, that's a trivial example by design, because you're trying to show that that's how simple it is. But let's get a little more complicated. I mean, what if you have slightly more complicated system where maybe, what about generics? Maybe let's look into this. Give me something more complex.
Generics work. You can use regular expressions. We have a specialized engine that actually understands regular expressions and finds matching instances. And
I mean, it is not a whole program analysis, but we analyze the entire trace across all calls, including virtual calls, And we instrument every instruction that is being executed mm-hmm. by the runtime to look at all the branches and so forth. That's yeah. basically the PEX engine. Mm-hmm. It's still in there. You still have the muscle of PEX pounding on your code. It's just that the surface in which we expose it is much more restrained. You don't have messages that you have to understand. It basically works or it doesn't work.
Of course.
Right. So to put that into context, there's one restriction in CodeDigger that many of you already might have wondered about. It only works on portable class libraries. Mm. So that's a special kind of library which basically says this code has no environment dependencies. This code may run on Windows Phone, it can run on Xbox, it can run in a Windows Store app. Mm-hmm. So we have this requirement because it means that the code is really pure and algorithmic and doesn't interact with a network or doesn't talk to a database, because those things would be platform specific.
Sure. So again, if I happen to be using a library, and we tend to use those in real world programming. So if I'm using a parallel library, for example, for parallel computing, and I have a function, and let's use main since you've used it. Inside of there, I initiate some classes, instantiate some classes from this library, and I do a bunch of stuff. Right-clicking, because it's not, I mean, that's what I'm trying to ask you. It's not portable class library. This is a specific library. You're going to say it's not going
to
work.
So what you have to do is take your interesting code, mm-hmm. factor it out into a portable class library, and then you can run CodeDigger on it. It's okay. that simple.
So right another on. Way to put it, like the story would be you're building your business app, and uh-huh. you're going to mangle your business logic that computes your salaries of your employees with, you know, the Vue and the XAML framework and everything.
Okay.
Right? What we really want you to do is take that business logic, which has a lot of branches and cases and edge cases, mm-hmm. and you care a lot about, and move that into a portable library, which we can analyze. And that guarantees from us that you're not trying to write CodeDigger through a XAML parser. It's going to be a large overhead for the engine, and basically you won't get anything out of the system.
Understood.
Right. Yeah. So that there's both technical decisions about that, but also to put our tool in the best position so that people say it rocks, rather than saying, oh, that thing doesn't work.
Understood. Right. But I guess since we're at the stratospheric level of this, and we're going to dive deeper into this, I want to know how this actually works. But while we're at this level, so, I mean, not everybody uses portable class libraries, because not everybody who's going to be writing an app, unfortunately, the way the world works is I target specific platforms. So I'm going to write a Windows Phone app. I'm not going to think about how should I design this so that I can easily run it on Xbox and Windows Store. That's just typically not how developers think today. That's going to change.
It has to change, right?
It has to change.
If you're targeting, your client's going to share code with your backend, your Azure backend, you're going to want to run your code both in Azure and both in your Windows client or Windows Store. You're going to go through a portable library there.
Okay.
Right.
So basically, this tool will help people. I kind of like this because it's going to help people to start thinking about using portable class libraries, thinking about designing portable systems. Then you get to use cool tools like this, right?
Yes.
There's a good marketing pitch, man.
So
nice job.
You're exactly right. We want that people try out portable libraries and write code that actually is portable instead of making too many choices about a particular platform that might not even be relevant. Mm. But in another sense, so we want everyone to try out CodeDigger now. And if you like CodeDigger, then you can check back in a couple of months. We are planning to create another version of PEX that will have the ability to run on all kinds of code. It will have many more buttons again to configure stuff. But before we give this complex solution out, we want that people can explore the simplicity of CodeDigger.
Okay, so now listen, let's be honest. So PEX is relatively complex.
Yes.
Right? I remember when we first talked about it, it was Build 2010, Eric Meyer was on the set, and the great Wolfram, right?
Yep.
And we were talking about it, and it was pretty complex, right? It was very scientific-y, very computer science-y. And so for the general developer, let's step back and kind of talk about it at a high level and then go deeper. How does PEX work? What's right. going on? And then apply that to this.
Yeah. So PEX actually came with a whole new methodology of how to do unit testing. We call that parameterized unit testing. Mm. So the idea is that you write a unit test that takes parameter. And then you would start by setting up your object that you want to test. Maybe you can write some assumptions. That was a new concept we added. PEX was full of new concepts. And you execute your code under test, and then you check an assertion. So in this example,
just going to rewrite it so it's...
Oh, so let's say that is our code under test.
Okay.
Then, so in PEX, what we really want you to do is to write parameterized unit tests for this code that check some conditions. So we want you to write a main test.
Or we could do the absolute value.
Let's change the example.
Yeah. Let's implement absolute value, right? So, boolean, integer, and then apps, and then we return.
Yeah, let's actually do something useful. I mean, the other main function was
if it equals 123 throw.
Yeah, who wants to ship that product?
Okay, so, you know. Is that going to work? Is that a correct implementation of the absolute value?
If you had an audience here, I would like to make a vote. Is this correct or not?
Okay. Well, there is no audience here. They're out there. Some of them are yelling and screaming in both directions.
Charles, do you have an opinion?
I have an opinion. So let's see.
While I'm writing the boilerplate code of the test. Charles has an opinion.
No, I don't think so. I'm going to say no.
It's not correct?
It's incorrect, and... Let's see what void test shows.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm writing my parameterized test. It says that I'm leaving X open, right? Now I want to. Usually I want to call. So I want
to. I mean, often you have to do more work. You have to create an object, maybe set up some properties, and then you call the function you really want to test. But this one is so simple that we can't directly call.
I call my function under test.
Yes.
With the input. And I get the output. And then I want to write an assert.
And with parameterized unit tests, we can write general asserts. So we can just say that the result should be greater or equal than zero, right? Because we want to get rid of negative values. We negate them to get a positive value, but no negative value. So in a traditional unit test, you would have to pick a particular value, maybe -5. And then you would say assert that the actual value is +5.
Okay.
But here we can do it more general and express a general property. Is this property true? Now, if you run this through PEX, the answer is no. There is actually one case when you pass minint in here, then you actually get minint back. Now, this is a bit funny. You have to look at the bits of an integer to understand what's happening. But with PEX, you get two test cases. One that shows you it works, and one that shows you it doesn't work.
Okay.
Or maybe three test cases, because they actually have a branch here.
So, in other words, I was right. But I was also wrong. Right.
But, so with PEX, we wanted you to write this test case, which in some sense is a good idea, but it's a lot of work too.
Sure.
So with CodeDigger, the idea is much simpler. You just right-click on your code, and you will get three test cases, and then you will see in the table visually what's wrong with your code.
So essentially, you're executing PEX underneath.
Yes,
we do.
And presenting me with a highly simplified
same engine.
Okay.
Now let's stay with this example.
Okay.
Now you want to use CodeDigger efficiently. This is what you need to do. You need to put the Oracle in your code. You need to add assertions in your code, or even use contract pre and post conditions. So in this case, I'm going to store the result here, let's call it C, and now I could assert, or I can even do an ensures if I wanted.
We have it flexible here with the syntax.
Oh yeah.
I think that gets the idea.
I could add a little assert, using debug assert, contract assert, whatever framework I'm using, that this is what I expect when I'm leaving the method. Now when you run CodeDigger directly there.
Okay.
PEX is going to try to cover every branch. That's the way PEX works. We haven't talked about that. But
we should.
There's one branch here, and then there's one branch in the assertion itself. And you will get a test case that crashes. Right. And instead of just passing, and you have to go and look at the values, in this case, you'd get a nice crash.
So in the drop-down table that you showed earlier, after clicking on the button, I would see an exception.
Yes.
Yes.
And could I click on the exception and get more details?
Not yet.
Not really, no.
Okay.
No.
But it's good. I mean, that's great to know something's broken.
You can, you know, rewrite it as a code and just hit F5 with the debugger and step through it.
Okay.
Ultimately, what you see in the table are concrete values. And you can turn these concrete values into code by hand with Code Digger and basically use then the debugger to step through it and understand what's happening.
Okay.
Great.
So how does this actually work?
Yes. Yes.
And for that...
Let's rewrite it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So this line had a question mark in it and fancy syntax, but really, if you look at the .NET intermediate code that comes out of it, it actually has a branch in it. And so in one case... I think
okay, let's get rid of the assert.
No, actually I liked it.
Oh, wow.
Keep the assert.
Okay, let's rewrite it.
You can also add it later again. Yeah, let's do it incrementally.
Is that readable?
Else in cursive? I like it. I know, I don't see cursive
old
enough,
school so Europe.
It's great, man.
All left-handed right. Cursive.
Left-handed cursive. All right.
So how does it work? So PEX will actually run the code and use particular inputs for all the input parameters. Here there's only one parameter x. So PEX has to start with some value, and it actually always starts with the most simple possible value, here, 0. Then we run the code, and the code will take a particular execution path. So 0 is not less than 0, so it will go into the else case. The reason why it goes to the else case is because it is not the case that x is, for this value, less than 0. Mm-hmm. And then we return. So we have seen one execution path now. So the next time, PEX wants to see a different execution path. So it takes this constraint system, negates it, and asks a constraint solver for a solution. And we actually have the world best constraint solver here at Microsoft Research. It's called a Z3. There's a global competition every year, and Z3 just rocks. There are many
awesome
categories, and I think we won most of them. So this is trivial for our constraint solver. So if we negate it and try to solve it, any value...
So we negate it, so it becomes...
Yeah.
Oh, you've already negated.
No.
Yeah.
So now we want an x that actually is less than 0. There are many possible answers. One answer it might give us might be -1. Then we run the code again with -1. And what will it do? Actually, now this is true, and yep, we return -x, right?
Yes. So you turn 1.
So it returns 1, yeah. And it does that because this constraint now is 2. And what happens now is that we are basically done. So in the program, there was one if statement, and it can... First it was false, and then we made it true. And that's it. That's all this program can do. Now let's make it a bit more interesting and add the assert again. Just like we had the program before. So we need an auxiliary variable. That we set. And then maybe actually we don't write an assert, but we write an if statement.
Yeah. Huh.
Another if statement.
So what would happen, just while he's writing, what would happen if you passed in an imaginary number?
Imaginary number.
So is an imaginary number, I mean, I isn't less, isn't...
Like 2 plus 4i?
Yeah, like uh-huh.
Yeah, I think the type system,
number.
The type system will complain. Because what we expect here is a 32-bit integer value, and it doesn't fly.
Doesn't fly because it's imaginary. Yeah. Oh, but man, I love imaginary
you
numbers.
You can implement your own number class, and then we can talk again about this.
Right on.
That
right
should
on
just work.
Okay, back to reality.
All right, so look at the red are the changes, right? I've added C so that we store the intermediate variable here. And then we have the check to see whether it's negative, we blow up, we throw an exception, right? And then we return C. We kind of inline the assertion method, but in general, text will go through all the method calls, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So that's the interesting one.
So what that really means is, instead of just having two cases here, we now, if you factor it all out, we have 4 cases. Because there's another if statement here. Another if statement. And potentially it can go well or not. So if everything goes well, then we wouldn't see an exception. And
it should always be false.
It should be false. but maybe actually it can be true. So PEX systematically goes through the different cases and builds a constraint system representing each case. So for example, what does it mean to be true here? That would mean that first if is false, so it's not the case that x less than 0 is less than 0, and the second if is true, meaning that minus x, might be easier to read. And now, this condition refers to C. C is actually derived from here. So what PEX does, it's really doing that, it is substituting in all the values. So what we are dealing with here is now minus x less than 0. Yeah? That is the first condition. And the second condition, the second case where we might fail is this one. So both are, both are true. So that means that x is less than 0, and in this case, I think
x less than 0.
I used it the wrong way around. So in this case, it's false. In this case, we actually go in here and set it to minus x. Sorry for that little confusion.
Not a problem.
Yeah. So these are two different constraint systems. Our brilliant solver is going to try to solve them. And maybe you, Charles, know which one of them might be problematic.
Okay, let's see. Well, I'm going to go with the denominator, so B.
B
is problematic.
Exactly. I mean, I already gave away before what the problem is. If x is...
Oh, I want more credit than
I mean, Charles did awesome there.
If x is negative, in particular min value, min int, which I think in hex is this number. Then this is actually minus x is the same value again.
Which is what we figured out the first time.
Yeah, because we already knew what's happening.
Exactly. But you know, in some sense it's still it's the same problem, but it looks different.
This is why
you understand what I'm saying?
PEX finds it.
Yes, which is why humans generally can't.
Right, this is...
That's very complex.
And imagine it's a bit more complicated than you're quickly lost.
Yes, so God bless Z3 and the great work that's going on underneath the covers. Yeah. So I can see how this would get really, really complicated when you have a lot of conditionals.
Yes.
And like advanced kind of stuff, where you're replying... I mean, if you have inside of your conditional, you're relating to some other class that does something that uses a different instance... They're sharing data, passing different information, blah, blah. I could see how this could be an unbelievable tree of complexity. And Z3 just blasts through it.
Exactly. It's very good at doing all of these case distinctions. You don't want to do that.
Amazing. Yeah, we don't want to do that, no. So thank
you.
So
we actually have a little example that shows a little bit more the engine in, kind of show the muscle here. So everybody has entered a credit card number into website and they'll do the check. There's an algorithm called the Lin algorithm that computes a checksum that is actually embedded into the card. It involves some bit shifting and then also involves checking the numbers for which company you claim your card is from.
Okay.
So there's quite a bit of code which we have in our machine, and we'll see how CodeDigger can blast through that and actually generate a valid credit card number from the code.
Awesome. Right. Let's look at it. Okay.
So in general, to use CodeDigger, you need to create a portable class library. I'm going to do that quickly here. So I'm going to create a portable class library. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then you have to write some code in the portable class library. And so going with the example we had before, I can create a little apps function that returns, depending on whether my x is, I think we had negative, returns minus x, otherwise x. And now, when I right-click on my code, a new option shows up called Generate Inputs. And this option is exactly what I want for CodeDigger.
Hexfish. Okay.
Hex technology.
Okay, so right now it's running?
It is starting up the process and it quickly finished. So what we are seeing here are two test cases, And one of them uses the important min value. Now notice that nothing here shows up as red, because, I mean, we didn't tell the engine what's wrong and what's right. It's just doing it. So now we can add the assertion we talked about earlier. So we can introduce some header variable and basically if if the case happens that we don't want, then we could throw a nasty exception. So this should never happen, right? But does it really not happen? So start the engine.
We know
and
that.
Now it actually comes back with an exception saying that for this particular value, it doesn't work.
Sure.
Okay, so now we're all on the same page. Let's look at some more interesting code.
And the beauty of CodeDigger is it doesn't change your code, it doesn't touch your project, it leaves no trace behind, it's very friction-free, you take no commitment with respect to your team on using it, because there's no artifact being produced by the tool, right? So you don't have to convince your buddies to install the tool or something.
Sure.
So that's also one of the beauty compared to PEX, who had dependencies, and you kind of had to commit to it and start using
it. And then you need to install it on the build server. And
Well, this is a really nice natural integration.
Yeah.
All right, so let me zoom in here. Okay.
So here we have a function that takes a string. And if it's not validated, then it throws an exception. So here's a branch in the code, and the question is whether we can cover the then branch, and there's always an implicit else branch, which would mean that we actually have a valid credit card number. Now, what does it mean to be a valid credit card number? So there's the code here, it's spread over a number of functions. They all have to start with a particular digit, and then there's a length constraint. And even if you get that right, then there's another validation function, which actually computes a linear combination between the digits and then modulo 10, the checksum has to be right. So even if you don't get the details, doesn't matter, it's well documented, and we can now just ask CodeDigger to see whether it finds any interesting values here. So I invoke CodeDigger.
Okay.
And what does interesting values mean here? We'll see in a moment. So it has to start up the process, which takes a moment. Then it comes back with a number of interesting findings. So you see that it always starts with the simplest possible input, null. And then some check looks for whether it's null or not. And then the next simple input is the empty string. And then somebody looks for the first two characters, and so we need two characters. And now you see how it systematically goes through all of the cases of the different issuers. And then later, so if I go in here, then later you see that actually we get strings that are long enough, that have 13 or 16 digits, but the digits are still not what we want. And then there's one interesting case where everything comes together. So it has the right prefix, the right length, and the right digit that fulfills the checksum algorithm. This is actually a valid credit card number. So, and CodeDigger figured that out just by looking at the code. It had no notion of credit card numbers. So you can run it through some non-trivial code to exercise your business logic.
Sure. And so in this case, let's step back though, just went real quickly. You said it has no a priori knowledge of credit card number, right? The morphology of the credit card number. However, it figured out that this one was right based on your code, right? Can you explain that again a little bit for people like me who are, you know?
Okay. So if you look at the code,
where in the code does it tell you what a credit card number is? Is there a
Charles, give me your credit card and then we're going to double check.
I'm going to give you my work card. All right.
So, I started from this function, which has two branches. If this function returns false, it's also an exception. Otherwise, it's happy. So, this is a challenge for CodeDigger. CodeDigger will want to cover two cases here. This one, that's probably easy. And that one, which is hard. We cannot immediately go here without knowing what a credit card number is. So, CodeDigger is actually digging into the code. It's going to validate.
I see.
And then validate does a check, and then it calls another function. So CodeDigger is going in here. It's collecting all the constraints. Mm-hmm. So in the end, you probably have 50 constraints. Mm-hmm. And it's solving all of them to come up with a value that actually goes here.
I'm actually quite impressed with how fast it is. Mm-hmm. You're running on a pretty powerful machine, I assume.
So we can throw something in. If you really want to toy with CodeDigger and you're not on your Visual Studio instance, we have it online at PEX for Fun, our toy website.
Great site.
So if you go to pexforfun.com, you'll get a nice, you'll get basically the same engine, but then running on our servers. Mm-hmm. And you can also solve those little, here's a cool examples. And you'll get pretty much the CodeDigger experience right there.
Absolutely. That's evolved.
Yeah, so CodeDigger is a Visual Studio extension. You'll get it from the gallery and has all the benefits from that. There's no admin rights needed. There's no more installer. It's a very nice extension business. You get notified when there's an update and all this stuff. So we're pretty happy about that. We did a lot of work to make that happen and leveraging features in 4.0 and 4.5 so that we didn't require an installer and we didn't require admin rights to get on the machine.
Excellent. Well, always great to come and talk to you guys. I see you're still doing great work. I'll come back and visit you again. I'm sure you're going to have something else crazy to show us. And speaking of the cloud, what are you guys doing as far as like computational services? So, for example, in this case, I could come to your website and play around the little script editor, but what if I wanted to, say, use some other thing to write code in, make calls up to a service to analyze a chunk of code and send back results to me?
So today, PEXAFUN actually runs on a single server somewhere in our research building. Yes. If more than 8 people press a button at the same time, they get queued up.
Understood.
But right now, we are actually working on a re-implementation of a fully scalable service in Windows Azure.
Great.
And that will be so much better. So it's a cloud-based backend. There will be a nice REST-based API, so you could send your own challenges to the service.
Yeah, we'll get big news about PEX for Fun, and we'll invite you back, Charles, to demo you what we've got in store. But
cool.
It's still too early to talk about it.
Understood. Well, hey, guys, keep pushing the envelope. Yeah. Always great to talk to you. Cheers.
Thank you.